Are you concerned about your kids, your grandkids? Has the culture of today swallowed up the faith of so many? Is there hope? Well, there is. Stay with me. That's today on Living on the Edge.
Welcome to this edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. We are an international discipleship ministry devoted to helping Christians worldwide live out their faith for the glory of God and the benefit of all people. I'm Dave Drewy, and as you heard Chip tease, today we're focusing on an issue at the front of many believers' minds right now, the next generation. Over the next two programs, Chip sits down with his friend Aaron Pierce to talk about this pressing subject. Aaron leads a ministry called Steiger, an international missions organization that intentionally shares the gospel with young people all over the globe. The two will discuss the impact of Aaron's book, Not Beyond Reach, and highlight the powerful stories of lives being transformed. But today, Aaron shares his heart for the global youth and how Steiger began. So with that, here's Chip.
Well, thanks so much, Dave. My heart beats for and cares so deeply for the next generation. It is so challenging to be a young person, to know and walk with Jesus Christ, and to really make a difference, to be a genuine follower. As many of you know, I have 12 grandkids, one that's 20 all the way down to 4 years old. And what we all know is that we have a generation, almost 70%, that in recent years has walked away from the faith. The researchers, whether it's Pew or Barna or others, have told us that inside Bible-believing homes, evangelical churches, about 68% of those kids after high school, 5 years down the road, are disengaging or leaving the faith. Something fundamentally is wrong. On top of that, we have a global youth culture with the onset of social media and a set of values and all the things that are happening that we all see and feel and are bombarded by. Where's the hope? Where's the Lord? And I want you to know that I have a good friend. His name is Aaron Pierce. He leads, along with a great team, Steiger Ministry. We've known each other directly or indirectly for almost 20 years. And the difference between he and I is that he's a young man. I think he's about 40 now. And I'm an older man. And God has something that he put on both of our hearts around hope for the next generation. And I've watched this ministry connect with the global youth and see people that many of us would think there's no hope. They're so far from God. There is absolutely no way. And I've watched this ministry grow and multiply into about 100 cities around the world. And what I've watched is God's hand on a young man and a ministry that really understands the paradigm, the philosophy, the way, if you will, to reach irreligious people. The global youth that are far, far from God. And so, Aaron, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chip. It's so exciting, such an honor to do this with you, and I'm just excited to see what God is going to do with all of this.
Well, I just want to jump right out of the gate and ask you, why are you so passionate about today's global youth, and what is it that is this drive in your heart, this hope that you have for what's happening all around the world?
Well, Chip, I think it's because we all see millions, literally millions and millions of young people all over the world, and also those right here in our own country that are being destroyed by the lies of the world. You know, we have this global youth culture, young people all over the planet that are influenced by similar voices. They're listening to the same music, following the same social media influencers, playing the same video games. And all of this is not just entertaining, it's shaping a worldview. And 2 Corinthians 4:4 says the God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers. And the God of this age is something called secular humanism. And this idea that God has been replaced, man is at the center, and there's no outside authority to which I have to submit myself. Nobody can tell me what to do. It's the era of my truth. And all identity and purpose and morality, these things that are so fundamental to life, these are now self-constructed. They're not things that I discover in God. They're things that I define. And so it's this era where we think we're finding liberation and freedom, but the truth is the consequences are actually devastating. So we have this global youth youth culture that is confused and sexually broken and anxious and depressed and lonely, loneliness being an epidemic globally today. And so we have these things, and it makes sense when you consider the worldview, because if you're the source of truth, you're going to end up confused. And if there are no rules, then you're going to end up broken. If there's no anchor in the storm, then you're going to end up anxious and depressed. And if it's all about you, you're going to end up lonely. And so this is the cry of a generation, this culture and generation that is overwhelmed with loneliness, anxiety, and depression. And here's what breaks my heart. Here's what fuels my motivation is they are not looking to the church for answers. Even though we have the ultimate answers to these things, right? Jesus brings truth to the confused. He brings healing to the sexually broken. He brings the ultimate relationship with the Creator, and he brings peace that transcends understanding. We have the answers to the cry of a generation.
And Aaron, I think to be fair, many of the youth would say, I don't see that. I didn't see that growing up in church. I went to a Christian school, or my parents dropped me off at church, or I went to a youth group, and it didn't seem real. It wasn't authentic. I feel like, you know, I went away to school, or, you know, I got out on my own, and a lot of things that people said were terrible and wrong. And, you know, I met people that were supposed to be the bad people, and they were actually really nice and very concerned. And so something's deeply broken, not just in this generation, but I think we at the church have to recognize, and we as parents and grandparents have kind of taken this us and them. What's wrong with them? They went away to school and now they think this or believe this or vote this way or that way. And we've got this polarization. And I think one of the reasons I want people to hear the message that you have that's proven, I mean, it's you all have done this with the people that are the farthest from God. And yet when they saw and heard and connected to the love of Christ in the way that you all have presented it, it's made all the difference in the world. So tell me a little bit about your story and your journey. I find when people listen to messages, Aaron, it's in a context. And I trust you. I know you. I've watched your life. I've been connected. I want you to share a little bit about what were the influences? Where did you grow up? How did you grow up that created this sense of real hope and has caused you and your team to go all around the world and see God work in places that I think most people right now think it's a lost cause?
Yeah. So I was actually born and raised in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And my family lived in a small little apartment in the center of the city near the infamous red light district. And my parents were there. They're American missionaries serving in Amsterdam. And they had a heart to reach young people of Amsterdam that would not walk into a church. And when you think about a city like Amsterdam, I mean, that pretty much describes all young people, right? They see these big, beautiful cathedrals, and they're essentially museums. They're dead and empty on Sunday. And so that becomes the view of God, right? It's an irrelevant relic of the past. And so that was a lot of the perspective that they were dealing with in Amsterdam. And so what my dad did is he would take a small group of people and they would go to the nightclubs and the bars and they would, late at night, and they would befriend people and they would share Jesus with them. And then they would write the names of everyone that they met and they would go out into the forest late at night and they would pray over these people and say, God, would you give us a breakthrough in this city? And that was the foundation where God really broke their heart for the people. And then in prayer, God gave them a strategy, a way to reach these people. And so my dad, who's the founder of our organization, Steiger, he felt led by the Lord to start a musical band. This was in the 80s in Amsterdam. And this was the height of the punk rock movement. That was the social movement of the time. It was what's shaping culture. And so my dad felt led to start a band as a way to use the stage to communicate the message of the cross in secular places. And it was based on the biblical idea that Paul said he preached Christ and him crucified so that people would not be convinced by human wisdom, but by God's power. And that the message of the cross is where God's power is. And when you lift it up in relevant ways in secular places, God moves. And so they did this, and right from the beginning, God's favor was on this band, and they started to get opportunities to play in these bars and clubs where they were already known because they'd been there relationally, and they understood the cry of the heart of the people there, and so they could communicate the gospel clearly in that context, and suddenly they saw many people coming to Jesus in that environment. It was almost overwhelming, and so what they did is they had a Bible study on a big red boat behind the central train station in Amsterdam. And the address of this boat was Pier 14, and the Dutch word for pier is steiger. And it became this ministry that was reaching and discipling young people of Amsterdam that would not walk into a church. And that was the beginning. And that was the environment that I got to grow up in, which was an incredible environment because I saw that God was real and that he had the power to transform lives. A quick story, my dad, the band started to get opportunities to go outside of Amsterdam. So they went to communist Poland and the Soviet Union and eventually all over the world. And they began to share the message in these secular places, and people were reached and Christians were inspired, and it sparked a movement called Steiger. And I got to experience that. My dad would take me and my brother Ben, who's also a part of the mission, and he would take us as young kids on tour with him. And we'd be in some nightclub in Eastern Europe somewhere. And at some point, he would bring us on stage and he would say to the crowd, he would say, "These are my sons. I love them. There's nothing I wouldn't do for them. Everything that I have is theirs. And if someone tried to hurt them, I would protect them with my life." And then he would say, "And that is how God feels about you." And he would equate a father's love for his children with God's love for them and then share the gospel. And in that context, I saw tough people with tears in their eyes praying to receive Jesus. And when you experience something like that as a kid, I mean, it ruins you in the best possible way because you see that this is not just religious activity, but that God is real and he can transform lives. So that was like foundational to my call. And it was also the birth of this global missions organization called Steiger that's all about mobilizing followers of Jesus to reach young people who would not walk into a church.
Well, let me kind of talk back a few things that you've shared, because the roots started with not here's a new method, here's what we're going to do, here's a pamphlet to share with someone. It started out of brokenness. It reminds me of Nehemiah, where when it seemed so impossible, he wept and he fasted and he prayed and he recognized that in and of himself, there is absolutely no way. The second, what I heard was long before there was a band or people coming to Jesus, it was friendship. It was real relationships, and it took effort, and it didn't sound like it was an easy time of the day. Like, bars don't get going till 10, 11, midnight, 1 in the morning. And it wasn't just a relationship where, oh, I met you and now I'm going to, hey, would you like to come to Jesus? This is what he did. There's this sense of genuine, deep, authentic care. And then fast forward with me, you have teams in about 100 cities all across the globe. Help me understand a little bit about what it looks like for Steiger today.
Yeah. And actually, we're already active in about 150 cities around the world. And it's just a move of God. And I define move of God as something we can't take credit for. He's doing it. And so fundamentally, our heart is to train the church, because we love the church and we want to see the church reach this culture that's all around them. And then we want to mobilize the next generation of Christian leaders to fuel an evangelism and discipleship movement that is youth and young adult led. And then out of that, to establish long-term missionary teams that are specialists at reaching the global youth culture of their city. And so what these city teams and these catalytic ministries that we develop do is, I mean, you described it fundamentally. First, it starts by desperately seeking God, where he breaks our heart for the lost and he fuels it with his power. We can't do it in our own strength, but then we need to go where people are. The big paradigm shift in reaching a secular culture and reaching this generation is we've got to adopt a missionary mindset. And that means going where they are and developing relationships with people who are far from God, who don't see the world like we do, and really understanding them so that we can communicate boldly, but also relevantly, the gospel message in a language that they can understand. And then recognizing that those that we encounter, those that meet Jesus, the pathway from that place to when they walk into a church is longer than it used to be. And so we create models of discipleship relationships that walk people into the church. So fundamentally what we're doing, and we love to use creative gifts to go to secular places, share the gospel through music and art, but other creative ways as well. And it's all about how can I communicate the message of the cross in secular places where young people are that would not walk into a church, and then create these discipleship places that foster a journey that walks them into a relationship with God and walks them into the church. So we're doing this in cities all over the world in various ways, but fundamentally, it's just a move of God that he's doing.
And Aaron, I think to be fair, I think there's a lot of our listeners right now are thinking, you know, this sounds really radical and out there. I just want to have a conversation with my granddaughter because I really don't get that she just doesn't believe in God anymore or doesn't have any interest in church. Give me some pictures of sort of what has happened, but then why do you think it's happened?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is you look at the U.S. context that we're in, for example, and we have this rich history of a fun, in many ways, a Christian nation, and where most people identified as a Christian, had a positive view of the church. They saw the Bible as a good moral guide. And so it was in that context that a lot of our amazing evangelists and missions from the past would engage culture. And it was Billy Graham could fill stadiums and speak about what the Bible says, and it drew people and it connected and many people were reached. Well, problem is that culture shifted, and largely due to the influence of the global youth culture and the religiously unaffiliated being the fastest growing religious group in our country. And with that is not only a change in affiliation, meaning like the Gen Z is about 50% religiously unaffiliated today, but it's not just affiliation, it's attitude as well. Their attitude has changed from predominantly positive and in an environment to where you could invite them to come to a Christian event to increasingly apathetic at best, if not outright hostile at worst. And a lot of it has to do with just, you know, cultural, political, us versus them stuff that gets in the way. But the problem with that is that they're less likely to come to our events. They're less likely to engage in the kind of models of evangelism that we've used in the past. And so the paradigm shift is we got to go to them. And so it's really not that different. It's just going where people are, whether it's a band that uses music or people that like, we have so many stories of people that are engaging people in places like, you know, bars or just community groups or hobbies and the spheres of influence that you have in your world where you'll interact with people who won't walk into a church, but yet they're hungry for connection. They're hungry for belonging. And so there's an opportunity to go to people, build authentic relationships in their environment, and then use that as a way to start spiritual conversations that leads them to Jesus. So we've seen this in all kinds of environments from, the extreme, you know, parades and clubs and bars, but also at work or at a neighborhood group or at a soccer field where my kids are playing. Like there's all kinds of environments where you can interact with people that won't walk into a church today, who are far from God, and being there in order to develop a relationship with them, to really understand them, know them, and what's going on in their heart. And what you find is as you do that, people begin to open up. People are very hungry to have conversations that are meaningful and deep. And so it starts by being present.
I think when I read your book, one of the biggest differences I see is a very different mindset about what our role is. The idea that just being a nice person, hoping somehow my coworkers will see some difference in me, inviting them to, it's Easter or it's Christmas. I think what I see is there's a very intentional, I'm going to build a relationship with no agenda about when's the big moment when I'm going to share the gospel. It is, I'm going to care about this person. I'm going to get engaged. And then I'm going to move instead of to a what you and I might talk about, a conversation about the cross and sin and salvation, I'm going to move second to a spiritual conversation. And there's a whole chapter on this that I think is so powerful, where you begin to listen and begin to ask questions about what's their view, what's their picture of spirituality? Because what we know, the research is, people who will not go to church now would very much consider themselves spiritual. But when you begin to probe and ask, their spirituality leads to places or is kind of a floating one that when the big issues of life, when death, the breakup, cancer, identity issues, it leaves them wanting. And it's when we're there in those relationships with a process that allows us then to share the gospel. And you've just seen God, I mean, move in powerful ways. Tell us a little bit about why you refocus some of your energy on America when most of the ministry really was launched around the world.
We started in Europe, a classic post-Christian Europe. That was literally the environment I grew up in, and this mission was started, and we were doing all this work around the world, and then we started to see where we came from, the U.S., going from this nominal Christian nation to a post-Christian nation, and many of my friends and pastors feeling they feel the weight of it, they feel the problem, the decline, but aren't sure what to do about it. And there can almost be a sense of hopeless resignation that this is just where it's going. And I guess my passion is saying, I have seen God move in these contexts, and I want to not only give tools and models and approaches, but I want to give hope that this generation absolutely can be reached, that it's not too late, and that, in fact, people, even though they seem so hostile and closed, they're actually quite hungry and open. If we don't have hope that this generation can be reached, then we're not going to act. And so I want to instill hope and say, yes, I've seen God do this. The God that is moving around the world is the same God here, and he can move in this place too. And to provide practical understanding of the culture that we're in and the influences and the philosophies of the global youth culture and post-Christian culture. And then, like you mentioned, starting with Nehemiah 1:4, having a greater heart and a brokenness for this generation that drives us to our knees in desperate prayer, because that's the foundation for any action. And then let's talk about tools and strategies for engaging in spiritual conversations, and so that believers will be inspired to reach this culture, and that fundamentally the ultimate goal is that there are people today, young people today, that will not walk into a church, but they're going to encounter a follower of Jesus whose heart is broken, who's been praying desperately, who will share Jesus through a spiritual conversation that will lead them to encounter the living God and to transform their lives. That's the ultimate goal, and I believe that that's going to happen.
You're listening to Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram, and we hope you've enjoyed the first half of Chip's interview with our friend Aaron Pierce. To learn more about the incredible work Aaron and his team are doing, visit Steiger.org. That's the word Steiger, Steiger.org. And as we wrap up, let me remind you that we are nearing the end of our mid-year match. Every gift we receive between now and June 30th will be doubled dollar for dollar. So if you want to help us reach this next generation with the hope of the gospel, pray about partnering with us. Visit livingontheedge.org or call us at 888-333-6003 to give a gift. That's 888-333-6003 or go to livingontheedge.org. We'll listen in next time as Chip continues his conversation with Aaron Pierce from Steiger. Until then, I'm Dave Drewy, thanking you for joining us for this edition of Living on the Edge.